Our Bible study class meets Tuesday evenings in the parish hall, and we discuss the following Sunday's readings. I knew I was in trouble this past week when, before I even sat down to class, one person said, "How could Jesus have made those people wait 2 days before going to visit Lazarus? He knew he was going to die, and yet he let them suffer through that without going to help? Weren't they supposed to be his friends? Why did he do that?" Oh boy, I thought. Then I said something like, "Well, we'll get to that. Just let me please sit down first." But the truth is, this parishioner was right. And to take it to a macro level, the question actually becomes, why would God let us suffer when God has the power to alleviate it? I just finished a 10-week Stanford online course reading The Brothers Karamazov by Fyodor Dostoevsky. Not a light read, but amazing and challenging. At one point in the novel, two of the brothers, Alyosha and Ivan, are discussing this very topic. Ivan basically says, "There is no higher harmony or divine salvation that can justify one little tear of a tortured child. And if such a tear is somehow necessary, then I respectfully return my ticket to heaven. I want no part of that." Why must people suffer? This sermon will not resolve that question. And no sermon really can. The traditional answer is, well, God gave us free will to do right or wrong, and so any suffering is kind of on us. We inflict it, we are victims of it. Which, of course, brings the obvious follow-up question, well, what about natural disasters? But I'm not going to go there today. Here's what biblical scholars say about that 2-day delay. First of all, Lazarus was probably already dead by the time Jesus got word of his illness. Martha tells him he has been dead 4 days. So even if Jesus had hightailed it out of whatever town he was in without waiting 1 minute, he would have encountered a Martha who would say he has been dead 2 days. But wait a minute, Jesus can heal long distance. He can zap his finger in the air and have a bolt of healing travel instantly to where it's needed. There are a number of times in the Gospels when he has said to the parent of a loved one, "Go on your way, your child is made well," from a long distance, or something similar to those words. So again, why would Jesus put anyone, much less his good friends, through the torment of losing a loved one, just to make a point about the glory of God? I have never really lost someone that I was close to. Both of my parents died, but each in situations that kind of made sense. A liver failure at age 59 after decades of drinking, or death at age 85 after a long illness that made it almost a mercy. But just on Monday, I was told that a good friend of mine, whom I've known for 30 years, has been diagnosed with a kind of cancer you don't want to look up on the internet to assess the odds of survival. He is 64 years old, a great, great guy, recently semi-retired. For about 2 days after hearing the news, I was strangely drained of energy. I felt like I was walking through molasses with a low-grade fever. And I know that many of you have lost someone very dear to you, a spouse, a child, a parent, a best friend. Plus, I'm a priest. I deal with death and illness on a regular basis, so I guess I somehow thought that the vocational distancing from others' suffering would carry over to most situations in my own life. But it is not so. I've been having nightmares, and there's a little pit of heavy dread in my chest. And I know, again, many of you have experienced this too. The reason Jesus gives for waiting 2 days is essentially that this illness does not lead to death. Rather, it is for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. which sounds a little like, I'm doing this so you can see how great God is and I am too. Because here's the thing. According to a rabbinic tradition, the spirit of a deceased person hovered in the neighborhood for 3 days before departing for good. So 4 days after Lazarus died meant he's thoroughly dead. He is beyond hope. And the real reason for his 2-day delay is so that Jesus can show everyone who witnesses this miracle and also show us through this story that actually nothing is impossible for God. That's why he decides to wait. Whether or not that satisfies our need to know why people must suffer, why people must die, is another question. But at the very least, we are asked to not lose the central message of this raising of Lazarus story. Nothing is impossible with God, even though we die. And I don't know how that works, but the fact that Jesus himself is crucified for loving us, then is resurrected, is central to our Christian faith. It holds the promise of more to come. When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who came with her weeping, he became perturbed and deeply troubled. The Greek for became perturbed literally means he snorted in spirit. A startling phrase, implying anger, perhaps at the presence of the evil of death. My interpretation of that snorting spirit is that Jesus is angry, thinking, why does it have to be this way? My interpretation of Jesus wept is, I am devastated at losing my friend, and I am so sorry that all people suffer so much when a loved one dies. Those are my interpretations, and they do not hold up theologically in any way. But it makes me feel a little less frustrated with God to think that even Jesus seems to decry the state of things, that Jesus also gets angry and suffers when he loses someone. The weeping and the snorting humanizes Jesus, helps us know that he gets it. And of course, he too will soon suffer in an excruciating way, again, for the sake of glorifying God and promising us from the cross that though we must and will suffer, he will never have us go through it alone. Anyway, I've probably bitten off more than I can chew here. But I do want to say, it's okay to get mad at God when someone we love dies. It's okay to snort in spirit deeply. But let's try never to think God would ever abandon us in our sorrows. Angels are often, almost always, sent to comfort us, friends and family offering consolation and their own love to help us through such times. I don't know why the suffering, I don't know why the death, but I do believe in the accompaniment, and I do believe in the resurrection. Can these bones live? God asks Ezekiel in our first reading. Oh, Lord God, you know. The answer is yes, they can, for nothing is impossible with God. In today's reading from Romans, Paul says, to set the mind on the flesh is death, but to set the mind on the spirit is life and peace. I used to think Paul was just referring to thinking about sex all the time, setting the mind on the flesh. But in light of this being paired with the Lazarus story this morning, I believe it actually means you can't judge God's love by fixating on the flesh of a loved one who's died, by fixating on death and suffering and loss of health, and thinking that's the end point. No, there is more promised. God's love continues on in spirit, in how we continue loving that person who's died, but also in an eternal way we cannot yet understand. So it comes down to faith and trust once more. In Martin Scorsese's movie, The Last Temptation of Christ, The raising of Lazarus is dramatically depicted. When the tomb is opened, the stench is so overpowering that everyone, including Jesus, covers their mouth and nose with their garments. In the scene, Jesus walks right up to the tomb's entrance, kneels down, and calls Lazarus forth. A zombified hand suddenly shoots out of the darkness, and Jesus slowly takes it in his own hand as it grips him tighter and tighter. But before he can pull him out, Lazarus pulls Jesus in. And it's a short struggle before he gets back on his feet and brings the dead man forth. When they stand outside the tomb, Lazarus pulls the bindings off his face, looks at Jesus, embraces him, and whispers, "God, help me." I submit to you that in this scene, we are Lazarus. We want so badly for Jesus to join us in our tomb, to conform to our understanding of what sorrow and loss and suffering and pain consist of, that we try to yank him into our cave of unknowing, where such things can only be comprehended from our limited perspective, this life of unseeing here on earth. But Jesus summons us and pulls us forth into larger life, into the glory of God that surrounds us and awaits us outside these walls of incomprehension, outside these walls of snorting and weeping, outside this life, and into the fresh air of the Spirit. For nothing is impossible with God.